but I don't think it's fair under the existing law to allow a corporation to have a license when they aren't even supposed to have, when the law says that they can't have a license, the existing law. Okay? Yes, sir.
Let me take one look at this. I, as an individual, would have to be a resident for 1 year to buy a liquor license.
That's the present law, yes, sir.
Does this say that if I come into Alaska as a non-resident and form an incorporation within 45 days, I could then, in other words, is there any, what are your limitations on corporations? Is there any time element involved?
The present law, sir?
Well, or what you propose to do here?
What I propose to do is to make them be here a year also. The present law allows you to come and form a corporate entity and start right out in business. Although the present law makes no allocation or no convenience for a corporation of any type to have a license.
You mean the present regulations?
The present law, sir. I know it sounds strange, but believe me when I tell you.
Well, sure, but isn't there a provision, a general provision in the statute someplace that says person shall be deemed to consist of he or she or them or they or a person or a corporation, partnership, or what have you?
Well, for many years...
I'm not arguing, but I just want to get some clarification.
No, for many years, Mr. Chairman, that's been a consideration, and it all depends on how... I guess originally the interpretation of the act was, but if you read the act, that's what it says, is no corporation may have a license.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chairman, nobody's paid any attention to that?
Right. It's a custom which is honored more in the breach than in the observance.
Okay. What does that mean?
Don't pay attention.
I mean, there's a lot of corporations that have liquor licenses.
Now, if you look at the present law and under section 0410160, it says interest in premises. No corporation, comma, wholesaler, comma, owner, comma, officer or representative of a wholesaler, comma, brewery, comma, winery, comma, bottling works, comma, or distillery may own any interest in a beverage dispensary or retail liquor store, comma, or finance directly or indirectly a license holder procuring quarters, comma, or supplying equipment, comma, furnishings, comma, stock or inventory in order to conduct business, period. So if you read it, it says in the first two words, no corporation.
So what you're doing is legalizing
corporate entities.
Yeah, which has been done for a long, long time.
Before
illegally.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Bill, on the what kind of liability does corporation have in regards to licensing any violations against the license and stuff? Isn't there something in there that wasn't there a reason for that? Where two or three guys, maybe they're felons and a whole bunch of other stuff, or that we don't want them to license. They, for $35 or something, they form a corporation and get a license.
No, they can't. $35.
They tried that, and we put the, and that's why we put in, we must know who owns at least 5 or 10% of the stock. But a corporate entity that applies for a license must list their stockholders, all those who have at least 10% of the stock.
What does the board do if a licensee is out here violating the law all over the place? How does that, what action can you take? I'm not that big.
A corporation has a corporation is license is supposed to have a name of service. What do they call it? Legal, somebody you can serve papers on.
Yeah, a registered agent.
Registered
agent. Service of process.
Right. And there's been many corporate licenses taken away, and there's been many corporations busted, at least during one period of time that I know of. People who had felonious records, after investigation, they were busted out, weren't allowed to even enter the premises, even though they were a member of the corporation. They were taken off and they were kicked out and the whole thing.
Well, you see in this bill that somebody, a bunch of guys that not, we'd say undesirable characters came up and wanted to set up a corporation and file for a license. What can the board do about it if two or three of these guys are undesirable? Will they still have pretty good control over it?
Well, not if the board, exercises their legal duties or whatever their powers and responsibilities are, they can eliminate anybody from a license. They can just say, hey, this man is not, we won't issue a license to a corporate entity that has this man as a stockholder. That's why we put it in the regulations that they must show what percentage of stock that they own. Anybody with at least 10%, we figure anybody with less than that wouldn't have anything to say anyway. The only departure the only equalization other than making it legal for corporate entities to have licenses is requiring them to be 1 year in Alaska the same as an individual. And this seems a fair thing, and yet there's another side of it.
Let me ask you a question. Another hypothetical,
right?
Apropos what Senator Danquist has suggested. Suppose the three of us have been incorporated as the MRZ with the idea in mind of getting into the building of a new bowling alley in this area. And we did this 3 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and incidental businesses.
Yeah.
And then Senator Bennett comes up here from California with a bankroll and buys our corporation. Would he, by virtue of not being a non-resident,
no.
He would qualify under this because
he
would be the owner of
that.
A corporation.
Right. He did, but
it's been here more than 1 year.
But the controlling interest in a corporate entity that has a license, the board must give the approval of the transfer of the corporate of controlling interest or any of the interest in it.
No, we don't have a liquor license at this time. He buys the corporation, then he starts to look around actively for the acquisition.
The corporation has been a legal entity for 3 years.
Yes, and he has bought us out, lock, stock, and
the corporation has been a legal entity,
yes,
for 3 years.
And then he could do this.
Sure.
Okay.
Right.
But it's still more, in some ways you're restricting things, in other ways you're tightening things up.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
It makes no difference to me personally. It's something that has to be brought out and reconciled, especially the corporate part of it. It's something that I faced it when I was on a liquor board, and we used to cringe every time we get a corporate license, and yet it was just something that had been back in territorial days. You know. Section 04, the next section is population limitations. And this is more or less the same as it is under the existing law, only it outlines the restrictions that the board applies, and it puts them together, 5 mile radius, inside, outside. No portion of the municipality may be counted as a part of a license outside. No part of a municipality an area outside this circle that is outside of the municipality may be considered for a license inside. It's just a clarification of the language, and I hope that it spreads it out. Yes?
Just out of curiosity, I've always wondered, you know how well that's worked out? Do you know how that 1500 rule has been carried on?
The 1500 rule is, it works to whatever the people within the communities want. There are exceptions to the 1500 rule, and those are the hotel-motel provisions, and they are allowed in excess of the population quota if the ruling assembly or the ruling body, governing body, makes a determination that they want an additional license.
I just often wonder, it seems like to me sometimes you'll see about 20 bars in a row, then you go 5 miles, you won't see any. And if all those five in a row, if that tied to any...
Sorry, you must realize that a great many of the situations that you're commenting about were grandfathered. Right.
You see, look, a license after it's issued, a man may move that license anywhere within a certain radius.
they may transfer it to a different location if it's acceptable to the board. He has a 1 mile radius. I think I've made a 1 mile radius. Within a radius of 1 mile, he cannot move it into another area if that would exceed the number of licenses. It's very complicated, and it takes time for you to have to sit down and go through and draw circles from the point of where the present license is, and draw your circumference you can transfer within a 5 mile radius, etc.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
To Senator Ray, in Sitka, for instance, we have the two new hotels, the Sheffield House and the Attic, which both were entitled to liquor licenses. That has nothing to do with the next man wanting to get a license with an increase of 1,500. That doesn't set on 3,000 people.
Well,
no.
As Senator Ray points out, if we build at least a 10
rooms, hotel unit, hotel provision,
plus adequate, which means a reasonable, not a sham, dining facilities. In other words, you've got to have a coffee shop serving food on, like 8 in the morning till 10 o'clock at night or something, and 10 new units. And I understand.
And airports also are considered on that.
Or like a lounge in an airport terminal.
Right.
I wonder if we could take a couple of minutes recess, Mr. Chairman.
Sure. We'll stand at ease for a minute or two.
Now, what we've done here, the present law is so fuzzy that it didn't consider established villages. In other words, if it wasn't an incorporated place, the present law didn't take that into consideration. We do, in the code revision, we make an established village also part of, and it tells you what the population is and when an established village is. So it does gives more control for those places that are communities that have no local governing body except probably the native chief or the tribal hierarchy. Those are the ones that are considered as the council, tribal councils, etc. It does give more local option to those people who live in what is known as an established village, where they have none at this present time. Down there it goes on to say about a hotel, motel, those are the exceptions, G and H. And here, if I might, for the benefit of Senator Bennett, on page 31, is the eating place definition. It tells it must be 18 miles from wherever. Also, it has under I, it tells about the transfer location within a 1 mile radius when no grounds for denial exists, and because of a termination of the lease, the rental agreement, condemnation of the premises, or substantial destruction. All this stuff is just hinted at. All these things are just hinted at in the present law, and we've taken them out and put them in the language so that there will be no mistake from here on in as to exactly what's to happen.
In other words, if Senator Bennett wanted to rebuild within a mile of where his existing or a former license was located, he would have no problem.
No problem.
Yeah.
And this also takes into consideration the alterations of highways. You have, say you have a junction of a highway here, existing highway, and you have
a... What's going on? Well, we're over here, so we'll get started. What we're going to do today, gentlemen, is we're going to go to work on section-by-section analysis of Senator Ray's recodification of Title IV as embodied in Senate Bill 239. In the absence of some compelling emergency, I do not intend to take any testimony on the bill today, although written suggestions would be welcomed by your chairman. It's my intention to run no later than 3 o'clock today, and we will resume our deliberations on this piece of legislation next Thursday and every Thursday thereafter until it leaves the committee. We'll be meeting next Tuesday, and I will announce the bills on Monday morning. By prior arrangement with Senator Ray, since he has put in a tremendous amount of work on this bill, since he has served as the chairman of the board of the ABC committee, and since you always listen to expertise when you have it available, I requested Senator Ray to chair all meetings on this particular item, which is now before us. And so with that, I will turn the gavel over to Senator Ray, and he will lead us down the path.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All the committee members have a copy of the bill and the what is subject as a proposed committee report. That's a fine name for legislative intent. And hopefully, when we go through this when we adopt the bill, we will also adopt the committee report as a letter, as a legislative intent. So they it'll give the court's guidelines as to exactly what the legislature intended in each one of the sections in plain language rather than in legalese. In due deference to our chairman, who is an attorney, it might cause a little loss of revenue, not to him, but to some of his colleagues. And
I support the expert.
Anyway, if there's any member of the committee, if it's a, I'd just soon maybe take a slight departure from what the chairman said as far as testimony or more or less questions. If you have a question, stop right there and ask it. Right.
I meant public testimony,
right.
not committee
right.
Questions.
Right. All right. Okay. Section one. We'll start there as the establishment of the board, and all this does is just it's self-explanatory. It explains it is a regulatory and a quasi-judicial agency, which is in the old, in the present act, but it doesn't really spell it out. There had been some problems in the past, and so there wasn't a Department of Revenue, and one time the revenue had control of their budget, et cetera, but this puts it down as to what they really are. The next section, 040602O, establishes the number and the qualifications of the board, the 5 members of the board, 2 from who shall be from the industry, and when we get down there, we'll run into a section that'll, when we get there, it'll explain some of the reasoning. The next section is 040 is the tells the terms of office of the board members and provides on filling. Yes, sir.
Query: the last sentence of section 020, Senator. Mm-hmm. 3 members of the board may not be engaged in the same business. What I assume you're saying is there shall not be 3 morticians on the board, or 3 doctors, or 3 dentists,
or 3 preachers.
Oh, okay. In other words, you're saying 2 people are going to come from the industry.
Yes.
All right. And then the other 3 are not going to be industry associated, but
right.
From they cannot be from the same profession or occupation.
Right.
All right.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
As you're going along, too, I think it'd be interesting, as far as I'm concerned, to know what the changes are from what the present is, and what changes there might be, like in the board or qualification or anything, if there is any.
Right. If there's any major changes in there, I'll bring them up. In the
This appointment qualifications is practically the same as in the bill that's there now. Terms of office, it tells about the only difference in there is that if there is a vacancy in the board, that the governor must fill it within 30 days. In other words, so that they'll have somebody there that won't go on and on and on and on without having a full board. Per diem and expenses, that's taken care of. It's just about the same as the regular one. And it's backed up with the regular, what all boards and commissions give. Meetings, this is also primarily what the old law is. Study the title and modify existing board regulations in light of statewide and local problems. It gives people an opportunity to be heard. Quorum and majority. In the present law, it says three members of the board or a majority of the board can make a decision. It also says that the director can be a tie-breaking vote, can cast a tie-breaking vote.
That is to say, for example, if four members of the board were present and they were split, in that event, the director could vote.
Yes, sir. Only we've had problems in the past in that there would be four members present and only two would be voting, two abstaining for whatever particular reason they have. Mm-hmm. So, in other words, to abrogate the responsibility and put the heat on the director, and he would be the tie-breaking vote, and they could run away and say, oh, hey, I didn't vote on that. Now what this does here in the quorum majority says three members of the board can meet and constitute a quorum for the conduct of business, except that a majority of the whole membership of the board must approve all applications for new licenses. This means that if there has to be three members present to conduct business, but there must be three members all voting the same way in order to approve any licenses, renewals, etc. This is a check and balance against the two liquor guys voting together against, or the two other professions voting against, and it's a check and a balance. So that it gives the equality, so that they say, well, there had been some complaints that the two members on the board coming from the liquor industry would constitute a sway of judgment. And this disproves that, because two members cannot do it by themselves. There has to be, somebody else has to be in agreement. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, as I understand it, then director or whoever can cast the tie-breaking vote, and that would constitute a third member of the board voting?
No. If a majority of the board is present and voting, which means four members, and in reality there would have to be four members split before the director could step in.
And he would become the third.
He would become the deciding vote.
And that would be valid.
Yes.
Even though there wasn't three members.
Right.
Before we move on, Mr. Comedy, Senator Ferguson.
Senator Ferguson?
Mr. Chairman, I've requested the committee to allow me to introduce a separate bill on the bootlegging portion of this, not to take an end run around your committee or anything like that. The bill that you're working with is very comprehensive at this time, and we do have problems with bootlegging out in rural areas of the state. And I would like to be able to get a bill that would move fairly swiftly through.
You have my blessing and carte blanche to introduce your legislation, Senator.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, with your agreement, the section 04-16-200 It deals with unlicensed persons.
What page are you on, sir?
That's on page 53. This makes an unlicensed person or a bootlegger, upon conviction, guilty of a misdemeanor and punishable by imprisonment for not more than 1 year, or by a fine of not more than $5,000, or by both. That's the first section. And the section, he is guilty of a felony and punishable by imprisonment for not more than 6 years, or by a fine of not more than $30,000, or both. If, in addition to the manufacture, so-and-so-and-so, the prohibited conduct involved a sale, barter, exchange to a minor, or if the person had been previously convicted under a misdemeanor. In other words, the second offense of bootlegging is a felony. The first offense to a minor is a felony. This is to stop the people who, under the present law, they can get a fine. I think the fine is not more than $1,000, if I'm not mistaken. And they can make that up in the one shipment. They can just get in the airplane and then fly out to the bush and pay for their fine and then make a profit on it. But if they get caught the second time, if you remember, there was a well-known person up around in your area. I think his name was Joe something.
Yes, I remember.
All right. When I was a member of the board, it's a matter of public record, and he was convicted. And we got the fine, and he got on the airplane and left and sold his load and made money off the deal. So this will stop that.
Well, this will stop.
I would like to co-sponsor with him if you allow me to be a co-sponsor on it.
Certainly you can put, we appreciate your courtesy in asking us if you can, because obviously you can. You don't have to have courage from us, but by all means put it in and review it with Senator Ray if you would, to see if he does in fact want to join us.
Frank, let me
see
that too. I like
to go to the market. Okay, there's your 30
seconds. Goodbye. Thank you very much.
Getting back to 060, this is the quorum of majority. It makes a check and a balance so that neither one nor the other can sway the judgment of the board.
Okay.
And the reason for two members of the liquor industry, if before it used to be one member as against the two public members, and it was enlarged because of the two separate factions of the liquor industry. One is the wholesale and one is the package store, or one is the dispensary and the other is the package store, and their interests are very different. So they said, hey, we want representation. They fight among themselves as much as any other group does. Okay, the next is the appointment and removal of the director. This is a substantial departure from the regular way of handling it, and the reason that it was changed is because in the past there had been some consideration as to who was responsible, who the director worked for. If he's a direct appointee of the governor and the only person that can remove him is a governor, then actually what his policy would be the governor's policy and not necessarily that of the board. And there might be inconsistency, and if the inconsistency is such that you cannot have a proper management, you have to have one outfit putting down the policy and the straw boss enforcing it. You can't be subject to two masters.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
The appointment and removal of a director, is it the same for political patronage or in a change of administration? Is this the same as any other director of any other type board, or is this, did the liquor industry set aside on this as a separate identity?
I don't know, really. That wasn't a consideration. One of the considerations was to provide a continuity. In other words, if the director was in there, suppose that he'd come in the last 2 years of a governor's term, and he was appointed by the governor, confirmed by the legislature, a new governor comes in, and he kicks the guy out because he's got a pal that he wants to give the job to.
Well, same for any other director of a board, though, or is it just the liquor board that we're talking about?
Well, it, the a bigger light on that is the Department of Education, where the governor cannot remove the director or the commissioner of education.
Fishing game, yeah.
Well, Senator, let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
What you're saying is that if the board, as a group of five people, determine they don't like their executive director, they can bounce him for whatever reason they come up with.
Right.
The governor may also remove his appointee, but only on specific grounds.
Right.
Okay, the query is the director or the appointment of the director subject to legislative confirmation? That's probably
yes.
in here, but I don't see it.
Yes, yes.
Where would it be, Senator, if you know? I want to put down a cross check there.
Is not in there, but it should be in 070. The governor shall appoint a director to serve as the executive officer of the board. Joe, is it a typo that it was removed that it shouldn't be confirmed by the legislature?
Well, the existing law provides for confirmation of the director by the legislature. 2 or 3 years ago, there was a case called Bradner versus Tanner, and some of you may remember where the Alaska Supreme Court held that the legislature under the Constitution did not have the power to confirm directors, only that their power was limited to confirmation of those officers specified in the Constitution. And that's why it has been made.
Chairman, I would ask that we would put that back in there.
Mr. Guthrie, we
can
see. And see what happens.
All I can do is
don't
tell
him to ask you. Call the
commissioner.
Yeah, he's the chairman of the board.
You're not the chairman of the board, no.
What would happen, if they wanted to let him go and two up, one and two and two didn't? Get the deciding vote?
Well, you would have to have five. Obviously, if you're going to get rid of them, sometimes it's 4-1, sometimes it's 3-2.
I can see where it might come up where he could make the deciding vote.
No.
Right.
I think that's not... Because he doesn't have a vote on that. All he has a vote on is renewals and that kind of
that's right.
Okay? All right. The next section, this gives the authority of the director, and that is he shall enforce the title and regulations adopted by the board. That's in the existing act. The next section, 080, is a substantial departure again. And this is a delegation of authority. This allows the board to delegate by regulation any of its responsibilities except the power to adopt regulations. However, the delegation and authority, the delegation of authority to the director is discretionary to the board, and in no manner does it free them from the responsibility of errors and judgment that the director might make. In other words, It allows for more freedom if they say, okay, if there is no cause for comment, no conflict in the issuance or transfer of a license, the director can temporarily approve it until the board meets and the board en bloc goes ahead. In other words, if there's any contest, it's usually then the board can make the determination the director will do it. The simple reason that the board is at the head of the agency and not the director. Now, if you
again, here is the thought, and there's one of the thoughts in the Sunset Review, is that if the director's going to do all the work, then you don't need a board.
What you're saying is the director can serve as the agent of the board when directed to do a certain project involving these things.
That's correct.
And if they have the power to revoke that agency relationship anytime they want to, at any given matter.
Sure. Okay. 090, it enumerates the powers and responsibilities of the board, and there's been some complaint. There is a regulation at present that providing for enforcement agents, etc., and they do not have peace officer powers, which we'll get to later, and that's been quite a thorn in the side of some of them. In other words, if you come into a municipality who is charged with the enforcing of the law, then an agent would have to go either to a state policeman or a city policeman and get them to go with them to arrest the person. So that's been one of the real shortcomings of the board, or through the enforcement angle. And they have come in for a lot of unwarranted criticism. This allows this allows them to contract with state troopers or municipal police departments for enforcement officers also, which is the powers they don't have.
And how was it before?
None.
None.
They just had their own enforcement officers. And there have been many criticisms, I think Senator Dankwitz can tell you, during the time he was in the troopers. In fact, we used to get in considerable debate upon it, saying, you guys are going to have agents, but I think you're going to do something. But they didn't have the power in the law, and although we did make the regulation, and yet the Attorney General, or some of the courts, would not recognize the regulation as being strong enough.
No, you did follow, and you were quite right on that. Every time we wanted to arrest them, they had to come get troops and go out there with them, and usually bringing the trooper into the place caused more hardship and trouble than necessary. But when we say that they can contract with a local agency, I think the municipality or something, do you see any chance in here that a lot of these municipalities will just unload a lot of their enforcement of regulations on the state and say, well, if you want the bar checked and move to a contract, we can do it? They've done that in some of these situations where...
Well, I think that the board would tell them no, and if they did not enforce it, they would take away the license money.
If you don't do the board's not forced to contract.
Oh, no. They aren't forced to. They can. It gives them the power. And
okay. I just want to make sure that some of these cities they did.
Well, really, what it says is with other departments and agencies of the state. That's what the law says. So that, I suppose it's along the line there, and I'm trying to give you a broad overview. If a municipality, if the board won the contract with the municipality, I suppose it could. But I don't anticipate that. And it puts the enforcement agent in the exempt service so that we don't have the same problem we had with the one that took us a year to get rid of them, and we had to abolish the position, and we could never rehire anybody. And as a result, there was a one whole year that we didn't have an agent in the Fairbanks area, and then the guy got another job so we could fill the position. This puts them in the exempt service wipeout. Okay?
Will we at any other time get into whether there's going to be a qualification for these officers?
The
fact that you could get hired sometimes, they get a good friend of somebody's, and they didn't. We really got, I think, in my experience, in the old days, it was a very bad enforcement officer that just sat around the bar.
There are none except when we get down to peace officer powers, and I think that might cover it to that at least will give you an idea. In discussions with the board, they were very receptive to the idea of perhaps in the enforcement field to hire state contract with the state police to be enforcement officers. And I'll show you why, and I'll show you why they can't do it now. The next is the regulations 100. This gives a list of areas that the board can make regulations, or they shall adopt regulations in, but it does not limit them to just these and these alone.
The director has no power to promulgate regulations.
No, sir. That's the whole thing. As the director, that's the only thing that the board cannot delegate the authority to, is to the director to promulgate regulations. The next is 110, which is your peace officer powers. Now, in the past, the problem existed that we went through is they didn't have peace officer powers, and they'd have to go get somebody to help them arrest. There was quite a insurgency among the officers saying, or the enforcement agents in the liquor board saying, we're under jeopardy and we want to go in and arrest these people, but we're afraid to without a gun. And it was the assumption of a lot of people that they want to get under the peace officer's retirement system, which was 20 years and out, and et cetera. So we said, we'll give you limited peace officer powers, and those peace officer powers, the board may delegate to limited peace officer powers, and those peace officer powers are only in the enforcement of the criminally punishable provisions of this act and the other liquor laws. Now, if you contracted now with the state police, the state police's primary function, now, Senator Dankworth could tell it better than I can, is to patrol the highways of the state of Alaska. That's their primary function. Secondary is to enforce the law outside of that. Third is within the municipalities, keep the peace, whatever. The state troopers are on call now to help you, but it's just like out here in the valley. They're not available through a lack of manpower. They have enough manpower to patrol the highways, and that's their function. Anything else is normally on their off time or on extra time that is not used in their primary endeavor, which is the patrolling of the highway. Is that about right, Ed?
Well, yeah, I suppose so. That's I think their powers are probably a little more spread out, but according to the way it's set up. But that's close enough. I want to ask the chairman something that maybe he can ask. Can you just, by statute, can somebody give themselves police powers? I know under the Constitution, I think the Commissioner of Public Safety is the chief under the Supreme Court or something. And they gave them under the Constitution the power to appoint special officers. Just, you can limit them to whatever they, like you're saying here, you can limit them. We've had trouble with these airports and these quasi police departments through the years where they suddenly want to write tickets, arrest people, and because the Commissioner said they
can. What about these parole officers? We went through that big report last year, too, you understand.
Well, what the consideration is here is that the Commissioner of Public Safety is not going to allow even limited peace officer powers to an enforcement agent that is not qualified.
I understand that, Senator, but are you in a sense saying that they have to get special police powers from the Commissioner of Public Safety?
Yes.
Okay, that you're going to use that law that says special police.
That's in the back, isn't it, Joe?
I don't believe so. I think that would be very something that actually would be.
There's also a question that under those powers that police officers have that was given to us, that there's only certain conditions that the Commissioner of Public Safety can do that. And I know we were handing them out to dog catchers, local city policemen, or anybody that thought they needed some reason to arrest somebody, including corrections, which we ran into last year. We'd give them special peace permits. And then for some reason, the Commissioner of Public Safety said that the way the law was written, he really wasn't supposed to be doing that. But we should look into it as we go along here.
Well,
I certainly agree they need the power.
Well, here again is delegating limited peace officer powers. We're giving them the right of arrest. Now, if the Commissioner of Public Safety says that they are not qualified and for carrying firearms under the firearms section, he doesn't have to give it to them. But he cannot, he has no right to say who and who doesn't have the right of arrest. In other words, a quasi-judicial agency, through a request of the legislature can give the right of arrest to whoever they want.
That's the question.
They can.
I know Pete Calamaritis came to town one day, bless his heart. He got arrested over a little stop sign or something out at the airport, and he called me and he said, "Who gave these guys the authority to arrest me?" And so we started looking through all the books and everything, and quite frankly, we were pretty embarrassed. I don't remember how it came out, but whether they could actually do that and where they got their authority. So I think it was corrected later by a blanket deal from the Commissioner of Public Safety, a blanket permit to the agency that was handling that, then authorizing it, also for the Park Service as well as the park.
I have no argument with that, but I do know through my experience, and I think it's backed up by law, that the legislature can create or give peace officer powers or statutes or provisions for whoever they want, blonde and blue-eyed, born in the Holland Tunnel at midnight. If that's who they want to give it to.
Okay, if that's true, that was my question, if we can do it. And I certainly agree with you, they do need these.
I think they can do it, Ed. There's no reason why they can't. The only problem that you'd have is in the carrying of firearms. That would be the only technicality that I would know of. And if the Department of Public Safety says the guy isn't qualified, he don't have to give him a gun. He don't allow him to have a permit, just like corrections officers or anybody else. But peace officer powers, the probation officer has peace officer powers, but he can't carry a gun.
Right? He got those peace officer powers originally from the Commissioner of Public Safety.
Well, even public citizens, as I recollect.
I haven't got the right of public arrest.
I think we all have the right to make a citizen's arrest for a misdemeanor committed in our presence.
Me sure you.
Well, sir, I don't know why we couldn't do the same thing for agents of the board. I mean,
the only thing, fellas, I've been into it before, and I don't know. You will have to look into.
We sure can help take it.
You can arrest people, and you make a citizen's arrest, but you can't transport them, and you can't do certain other things as a peace officer. You have to wait and call a peace officer. You can't just grab a guy and take him somewhere. And it would take just a minute, I think, for our attorney there to research that right quick before we pass this out of committee and make sure.
Well, we ain't going to pass this out today.
There's not going to be any hurry about passing this bill out. We've got a long way to go. A lot of time to spend.
Something we should check on.
Got a note of that, Mr. Guthrie?
I was just going to suggest we might rediscuss it from here.
Okay.
Problem area.
All right, we get into section 2, or chapter 2, which is 11010, which is tells that when a license or permit is required. And then the next section is the exceptions, when a license or permit is not required. And here you will find the first section A is primarily in the existing act, only it's spelled out here so that you can understand the bankruptcy or foreclosure, etc. And in the old act, it was vague and you couldn't tell what it was talking about. B is the problem of people having community parties, office parties, where equal contributions in the, I believe, you, Mr. Chairman, did you have a bill in on that, or you were investigating it one time? And I know it's been a problem, and the interpretation of the board for a good many years was no permit was required, and then a new board came in and they said now a permit was required. And in other words, to have an office party or a private party at somebody's house, you had to have a $25 permit, which
Well, nobody's going to pay a damn bit of attention to any such regulation anyhow, so as a practical matter, I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Okay. Well, we thought we'd put it in the law so that there wouldn't be no error with it. 11030, and the death of a licensee, this spells out and clarifies exactly what's in the existing act.
Okay, well, you need a technical change, Mr. Guthrie, on line 17. You should delete executor, administrator, and insert personal representative, which will bring in conformity with the uniform probate code.
Right.
The next section is a board of approval of transfers. This is tells that nothing can be done without the approval of the board. And it says this is individual licenses or permits to a person or a corporation. In other words, controlling interest in a liquor license issued to a corporation must be reported also.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes?
You recall probably a couple of years ago where the director was on vacation or something, and there was a whole, and by that I mean several hundred, licenses that weren't renewed. And there was, the time had, of the current posted license had expired. And I can recall about 2 years ago, maybe 25 or 30 calls from up in my district saying, what do they have to do, shut down? Or can they just continue to operate without the license?
They get telegraphic authority.
Right.
To continue to operate pending the receipt of the license.
Receipt of the license, and they post a telegram. That's what we used to do all the time.
Okay, that's still in effect.
As far as I know. I mean, I don't know why. When we get back in there a little bit farther, it'll show they got the 2 months grace period in case that they don't do it, but they have to stop. But we used to stay open till the night, on the deadline of the night of renewals. We used to stay open till 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning down there to be sure they were, and we were watching to see that everybody had their chance, and then after that, well, hell, you know, too bad, you know, lock up.
The next is a non-resident distillers, brewers, winers, and wholesalers. It's reports required of corporations, and that's in the existing act. I think it just, all the only changes in there that I can see is clarifying language. Nothing else, there's no, nothing of any consequence. This writes out, without any doubt, so nobody will have any question on it, that the board and only the board can issue, renew, transfer, suspend, or revoke a license at this time. But the IRS or municipality, the court cannot transfer a license. Nobody can. Just the board.
I question whether or not that's, well, never mind. I'll talk to you about it later.
Well, we're taking it out. We got the quotes, Mr. Chairman, as noted here in, at the Supreme Court of the State of Alaska cases. And it'll reaffirm later on where there is a possibility of using a collateral, but not the license as collateral, just the opportunity to transfer as collateral. You'll see.
Well, what I'm envisage is a situation where this is coming right from the top of here.
Sure.
Suppose you have some heirs litigating who would be entitled to the liquor license held by the decedent, and it's now in his estate. And the court, after hearing the case, enters a decision saying that Josephine is entitled to the license. Then the court would issue an order to that effect, telling the board to transfer the license from the decedent's estate to Josephine.
Mm-hmm.
But the court couldn't do it. But you're not saying that the court couldn't tell the board to do it as a matter of law.
The court can tell the board, but the board, if they don't want to do it, can refuse to do it and take it to a higher court.
Okay.
A follow-up on Pete's suggestion first. How does this change in the written, from the original law? Who can revoke and suspend a license of that next municipality degree?
Nobody can.
Is this inconsistent with the present law?
No. It isn't inconsistent. It just clarifies once and for all what the existing law says, and it just says it in plain language. Nobody can transfer it, and it's backed up by the Supreme Court decisions, where they recognize and they suggest. In fact, one opinion came out saying that the courts did have the authority. The next opinion after that came out and said no, they didn't. The next opinion after that said no, they didn't. So we got a 2-1 go at it. I don't think it was. I understand your concern, but I would hasten to say that I don't believe that the board is going to run counter to
legal order. Yeah.
Discretion is sometimes a big part of valor. All right. The next is the 080 is just the types and licenses, types of licenses and permits. Now, there is a change in here that some of you should be aware of, and that is there's no more roadhouse licenses. Roadhouse has been changed to eating place, which means the same as a roadhouse. And has the same requirements, but when they had the roadhouse, nobody knew what the hell a roadhouse was. Also, the change from retail license has been changed to package store license, because it was people had the trouble between wholesale and retail licenses. I think those are the only changes as far as the. We added duplicate beverage dispensary license, although that is within the existing regulations and been used for some time. Yes, sir?
Just one question, Senator. Mm-hmm. If under the old roadhouse, there was provisions for a 6-month license for just during the season.
Right.
That's still there?
No. However, the board by regulation may, we put it, the license starts in January 1st. And runs till December 31st, unless the board issues it for a lesser time. But we're going to leave it up to the board by regulation. If they want to reestablish a 6-month license, they can do it. But we're trying to get some kind of consistency. In other words, the board will be the one to make a determination when the 6 months are. And so some guy, well, I don't want to open up this year until June, and I want to run until December. Next year, I want to open up in January and run for until June and quit. You know.
How about the fees?
The fees?
Yeah.
They can make their own determination on what the fees are. The board.
They could pull rate on.
Pull cut them down. Well, I guess a 6 month license probably be go for half fee.
Senator, I suggest we take a 5-minute break,
right,
and we'll get back at it.
Okay.
As it be provided for what has been, we put the regulation which was adopted on the duplicate beverage dispensary licenses. You understand what that is? Like the Westward Hotel has got a bar on the ground floor and one on the top. For which they pay 2 license fees. The only thing we did, there has been some complaint that the municipalities didn't have enough say, so we put it in the last license. If the license premises are located within the municipality, a duplicate beverage dispensary license may not be issued unless approved by the council. So, in other words, the board, the council has to approve it. Too bad. Also, we didn't put in there, and this might be controversial, we don't say anything about cash.
You don't say anything about what?
Cash. The reason why I said is we had the problem about the running tabs or whatever.
In other words, you've done away with the prohibition against selling on credit.
Yes.
Okay, well, that's all right. I have a question for for him, though, quite often down at the Baranoff, is an illustration. They will hold up in the Gastineau suite a function at which a no-host bar is provided. Does that require a duplicate license?
No, sir. No, sir. You see, where there is a regularly maintained a fixed counter or service bar, and those are not fixed, they are on wheels. Whether the wheels function or not, they're on wheels. That's the exact language that's in the existing regulation, yes. Ed?
Well, as we review this, I'm going to have some objections, of course, later on. I'd like to at least discuss a little more about this, just doing away with, cash. I certainly understand our
problem.
But don't you see some of these guys out there, some of these guys that are actually ill alcoholics, will go in and they just have to have a drink so...